Peace to the people. This is Mike Jr. and you're listening to On The Move podcast, where we illuminate the struggles of the people, inform the uninformed, and give you nothing but the truth. On The Move is here to disrupt the system and spark a global revolutionary change. A change is what we need. Like Sam Cooke said, a change is going to come. But like Gandhi said, you got to be the change you want to see in the world. And even though Gandhi was not perfect, he said something that was true. And when the power of truth is present, you better respect it. Today again, got my parents here. Say hi to the people, y'all.
Hey, people.
Hi to the people.
Welcome back. Glad to see you guys here. You guys look radiant as ever. Today, we're talking about a lot of things. If people listened to the podcast, they heard these things before about these issues with my sister, your daughter, and some of the other people that decided that they wanted to leave the MOVE organization and go their own way. And as they did that, they wanted us to speak out against the injustices that we recognized that were within the organization, right? So, for the last few episodes, I've been saying that I'm still like processing this whole thing. It's re-traumatizing partially to have to remember and go back in time and think about some of these things. But to show respect and support, it's good to do that, right? So I guess before we get into that, though, how y'all feeling today right now?
Oh, I'm feeling okay. Just okay, though. It is a lot going on. Mm-hmm. These things have a way of just kind of, you know, getting into your space and,
yeah, you know, getting into your head.
Making uneasy, that's all.
Yeah. How about you, Dad?
Well, you know, I'm still thinking about a little brother, you know, and
Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck. Yeah. Just wanting to make sure, you know, he's, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And given the proper acknowledgement of his contributions to life.
And Chuck would definitely appreciate that. Mm-hmm. He really, really loved you. But to switch gears and get into some of these other things that, you know, my sister complained about, there were a lot of things that were said. A lot of very specific incidents of harm. Some things I was not aware of. And I guess being so young coming into the organization or being a part of it, some things I wasn't even aware that it was harm. You know what I mean? Like, I remember one of my nieces, she said to me, you shouldn't ask a girl when she's going to have a baby, because it's a very important decision, right? And just things like that. But there's a lot of things that they brought up. One of the things they brought up was this thing about forced marriages, getting married and being forced into that situation at the age of 16. Mom, do you want to tell us the story of how that happened, the way you remember it?
Yeah, well, I remember a phone call I called at home. I was in prison at the time, and it was a time that you guys were having a hard time, you know, in your lives, period. And
transitioning from Reno Street.
Different
to
things.
MOVE.
Yep. And then you were, going there and to Reno Street. Y'all wanted to go to MOVE. And I encouraged it also. So, but after a while, I don't even know how long it was, but after a while, I got on a phone call with Bert one day. And she was just talking about, you know, the situation as far as y'all being there. You know, she was saying that, you know, you being a boy, you know, was a little different. But with Wit, she was a girl. She was very pretty. She was growing up. She was maturing. That she, because she was there, there was other people around. They were always involved in events and stuff. And she said, being that she wasn't her daughter, she wanted to make sure that she was protected. So she wanted to make sure Wit was protected, and she didn't want to be responsible for anything, you know, that you know, that could happen to her, because she was developing and she was, like I said, very pretty. So she wanted me to encourage her to get married, because this way, if she was married to somebody, you know, on her level, they'd, like, he would be there, like, to protect her, like if anything happened or you know, or if any kind of threat or anything from anybody, but especially as far as men. I didn't really want to do it. I felt very uncomfortable. But I believed, I mean, I believed in Blue Mouflon. I believed what I was doing. I was very dedicated. You know, I trusted people. I trusted Bird. I loved Move. And so even though I was uncomfortable, I was scared. I got scared because I started thinking, it's almost like
you got scared of what?
I got scared when she was telling me about Whit and how she was getting, you know, developing, and she was, you know, she was pretty, and you know, she always, it was always people around, and you know, like demonstrations and stuff like that. So she didn't want to be responsible. So the thing is you always come to the worst thing that might happen to your child when it comes to any kind of warnings.
Mm-hmm.
So it scared me. So although I didn't want to do that, you know, to her because she was still young, I had a conversation with her anyway. And I encouraged her, you know, why don't you, you know, get married, or, you know, or if you don't, well, Bert said it. She said, if she doesn't do it, now she has to go, she'll have to go back to Reno Street. At the time, we didn't really want to go back there. So she did choose to. Well,
before we go further, did you think that at the time that Alberta manipulated you to talk to Whit?
At the time, I didn't think that she was just trying to manipulate her to get her to do it. But sometimes, I thought she really felt what she was saying.
But
was true.
If she hadn't called you, would you have told Whit?
No.
Okay.
To get married? No.
Yeah. Absolutely. You wouldn't have encouraged her to.
No, I would not.
You think about that?
No, I would not. Would not. But later on, I started feeling like that, you know, when the other kids was encouraged to get married, like at young ages. So I did feel like kind of manipulated. But at the time, I didn't.
So the thing about going back to Reno Street, like Alberta said, if she doesn't get married, she has to go back to Reno Street. Did you tell Whit that, or did Alberta tell her that?
Bert said I should tell her that.
Alberta told you that, and then you told Whit that they're going to send you back to Reno. How did that?
She said, she has to go back. If she has to go back.
And you told Whit that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. You know, and like I said, because I believed in what I was doing, you know, and although I felt kind of uncomfortable, I regret that I did that now. You know, I regret that I did that and encourage her like that, you know, because she is, you know.
Well, I was going to say, why do you regret it?
I regret it because she's unhappy. I regret it because she is unhappy. She did not really want to do it. And although, you know, her and they're the same age, her and, you know, the person she did marry are the same age. You know, I just regret it because she is unhappy and she's mm-hmm. unhappy and she, you know, she's still unhappy. I just wish I hadn't. I wish I had had more resources in my own head at my disposal to think more, to, you know, give her other options or, how can we do it this way? Can we do it that way? But my, you know, my just thinking just didn't go that far. And that's really what I regret, that I didn't have, I didn't try to figure out more resources that I could just pull on to feel like I could just give her, you know, choices or options or, you know, so I truly, truly regret that I did that, you know, and it was a mistake. It was a really big, big mistake.
What did you remember about that, Dad?
So, yeah, I remember having a dispute, an argument about it. I remember people getting on the phone telling me, as you know, as Debbie just said, that as your mom just said, that she would be in trouble if she was not married. And you know what they felt should happen. I told Bert and some to sue to, because the phone was passed off. And under no circumstances did they have the right to try to force her to marry anyone if she did not want to. And I told her when I had when I had a conversation with her, that she did not have to do that.
What was her response?
And they could not make her do that. I can't. I don't think she had much of a response at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I said they did not have the right to do that, nor should they. They, you know, you can't force somebody to do that, man.
When I heard about it, you know, I was a teenager. I was her pesky little brother, I think, to her. I was kind of shocked about it, about the idea of it, because I didn't really know how MOVE worked, but I felt like I'm relearning MOVE, and I expected that there were going to be some things that I didn't remember or didn't know or didn't understand or whatever. But my feelings about it didn't have any weight to it, you know?
Yeah, as it turns out, neither did mine. And yeah. I'm a father.
Yeah.
And, you know, you said you didn't have any knowledge about how these things went.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these things were going as time went along. You know, this was not something that was a standard practice that I had ever seen when this stuff started happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was new to us as well.
Hmm.
You know, we went to prison. Well, Whit was 2. But all the children were little.
Mm-hmm.
They were kids. I mean, they were little kids. So all these things start happening, you know, more than a decade after we were in prison.
That was a long time ago. What's the status of the relationship now?
With who?
I guess with Whit. Like, where are things there?
Yeah, I don't know. I have not talked to Whit since they decided to leave.
Mm.
I have not been in communication with her at all.
But that's not to our decision.
Did you have other conflicts with people in the organization about decisions they were making with your kids?
Not as much conflict,
mm-hmm.
because my decisions with my kids were my decisions. You know, do you think I ever told you something that I was just toeing a line, or what I actually felt?
You mean toeing a line with the other people?
Yeah,
the
other people. With anybody else.
Nah, I never felt that. I always felt that if you didn't believe it, you wasn't going to say it. And, you know, I felt that you tried to avoid conflict, but if it was unavoidable, you were not going to lie to try to make somebody else feel comfortable. You weren't going to put me in a position that would make me feel compromised. I never felt that from you, no.
All right. So when I was asked about education.
Uh-huh. Well, to give the people some context about education, when you say education, you mean when there were organization discussions about sending the kids to school or educating the children.
Right.
There was discussions about that, and your take on it was a specific position and other people were different.
Yeah. So it was simple to me. And
what was their idea of it? What was their take?
Kids didn't go to school.
MOVE kids don't go to school.
Didn't go to school. No.
And your position was
they should be educated.
And why was that your decision? Even though, you know, there's all of this MOVE ideas and beliefs Why was your, well, the kids at Osage didn't go to school either. Why was your decision that they should be educated?
It was simple, man. I mean, you're in, you know, a city or a country. You could have been in a country, you know, but you were in a city, you know, if, and we were just fundamentally, you should know, you know, I'm not saying you had to go to college and be a scholar, but you should know basic fundamental things just to get around, just to, you know, to operate in society. You needed to know basic things, you know, to not know these things was, you know, to me was just nonsense. You know, if, you know, you're in situations, and especially being in what we were doing or what y'all were doing out there and attending demonstrations where you could be separated at some point or, you know. And if you were separated from your children, because the people you were opposing didn't, they've demonstrated, they didn't care about how they treated us or the kids. You know, so how would they, how were they supposed to navigate back home? You know, just fundamental stuff, man. Read us, yeah, just, you know, it made no sense. It made absolutely no sense. So, yeah, when, you know, it was clear to me that, you know, you should be educated.
Did you have conflicts like that, Mom?
Not till later on. Like I said, I really believed. See, in my understanding of the guidelines that were written and also taught, and my thinking was that, you know, you still, you have instincts and you have instincts and, you know, whatever the situation that you're in, even if you couldn't read, even if you couldn't write, there were, you have instincts to you can learn to navigate. And even though we were in the city, so these were the things that I would say to myself when it came to like different things like education, because I was, I really believed in what I was reading. I believed in what I was being taught. And so because of that, you know, I did, I would go along with it. So I didn't have those kind of conflicts in the beginning. And also because my experience in going to school, I didn't like it. I didn't like it from kindergarten to I don't know what grade. I did not like it. And it wasn't nothing happened to me. I just didn't want to be away from home. So that was from a little child.
Yeah, well, that didn't have anything to do with learning.
Right. But the point is, right. But the point is I took what I felt about that and put it into, I used my own feeling, trauma, whatever you want to call it, my own experience in that. And because of that, I was really a kind of afraid for y'all. I didn't really, kind of didn't want y'all to go away from home either because of, you know, that thing. And also because of just the way things was. The thing about learning to me going to school, it wasn't really about so much learning. It was about going away. It was about going to another place. It was about being away from home, being young and being away. It was about bullies. It was about things like that. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted you to learn how to read and write. If you remember, I would send home stuff. I said, well, okay, if y'all want to learn how to read and write, y'all send home some ABCs and, you know, send it back to me. I had a whole thing. I don't even know if you remembered or not, but I would send home like things like that so that you could learn.
I remember animal books.
Yeah.
And sketch pads.
Yeah. And trying to figure out like, well, okay, well, maybe we can do it this way. I was even trying through the mail. So for me, it was more about going to another place, another building without an adult, without, you know, and I'm being 5 years old. And so, you know, that's,
well, you know, we tried those books and we tried, and I could read before I went to school. Mm-hmm. From the, I could spell my name and I could read different things before I actually went. Mm-hmm. But, I couldn't wait to bust through them doors.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And actually, me and your dad did talk about that at some point. And, you know, I was telling him the same thing that I'm saying now. And he was just telling me, he said, you know, Deb, I want him to learn, you know. And he said, everybody don't have the same experiences that you have. He said, I love school. I love going there, you know. So, and I didn't fight him on it. I was like, okay, well, okay. You know, so I just kind of like, okay, we'll take our chances, you know. So I didn't just, you know, because I wanted you to learn too. Mm-hmm. It was just the other things that was in my head that kind of weighed over on that, mm-hmm. on that whole situation.
You know, after all this stuff, all these years, time and experiences and traumas and all this stuff, what's something that you learned about how you've had to raise us from prison?
Yeah, I think, you know, you should tell your children, especially, how you feel. You should tell them the truth. You know, I've had regrets, man. I've made decisions that I regretted and cost me dearly, cost our family dearly. You know, when you give in to someone else's thinking, when you let other people control your decisions and your outcomes, it's, you know, it's not good, man. And if you learn those decisions, then that is what you want to teach your children. You know, when you pay for mistakes and pay for mistakes in the way that we pay for mistakes, you know, you don't want to put your children in the same on the same path. You know, so even though you know, you're trying to guide them as best they can, as best you can, you know, when you get a chance to influence your children and yourself, you know, you don't want to make your children the same victim that you've been made to be, you know. So when you get the chance, you don't always, that don't always happen with us. You have to take your shots. When you do, you're always ready for them, or you try to be ready for them. Mm-hmm. And the best way to be ready for them is to have a mindset that when you do get your shot, take your shot and tell them the truth.
Are there things that you learned about me and Whit, and about how we were raised, that you were surprised to learn when you came home from prison, that your eyebrows are going up? Like, mm-hmm. was there certain things that you...
Oh, yeah, it was a bunch of stuff, man.
Really?
Oh, really.
Like what?
You just said the other day you ate horse meat.
Oh, yeah.
Almost, you didn't know that?
No.
How would I know that?
We never ate no horse meat. Kids never ate horse meat when we were growing up. Yeah, I was shocked. Speaking of the horse meat, I was shocked and devastated and humiliated and embarrassed and ashamed, everything else. Like, what?
You know, this,
but you told me it tastes good.
Yeah.
What?
You told me it tastes good.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was about to say, there is an interesting dynamic here, because I think people really get upset when I say this. But I say it because this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not trying to make anybody upset. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. But I am not ashamed of who I am or how I was raised. I'm ashamed of harm that was done, that people did to people, to people did to us, and that they influenced us to do to others. I'm mm-hmm. ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. But the attempt to be the best of who we are and who we were and what we were trying to do as people. You know, some mistakes were, for me, that's mm-hmm. how I grew up thinking. Like, some mistakes were made. There's a lot of things that we did that we don't do anymore because we recognize that we shouldn't have been doing those things. To see somebody get sick from it and then continue to do it, whether they're sick or not, I think that would have been a problem. But like, I know other people are really upset by that, those comments, but I'm not ashamed of that.
And I think for me, I'm not ashamed of it for you either. I'm glad
now, I don't feed it to my kids.
No.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Good. Thank God.
I never have, and I never will. And mm-hmm. I won't, and I'll tell people those stories because they mm-hmm. happen, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of things in there mm-hmm. that the way we lived, I would never do or never encourage somebody else to do, whether they're my kids or not my kids. But I'm just saying that those were learning curves that we were on. And I don't see myself as, I don't see myself as a victim of things as much as I feel like we got to take, I don't know what, I know that I was abused in different ways. I know that I've experienced a lot of trauma at the hands of leadership and other people and manipulation and all of that. But I guess the way my mind works, the way I'm thinking about it is, yeah, I know that, I recognize it, but how are we going to like get past it though? Like how, like, I just feel like, yeah, these are experiences and I'm not ashamed of them because they are just experiences. They're my life experiences. Now let's move on. That's just me.
And for me, I think, you know, I'm glad that you weren't, because I have no shame in the diet that y'all ate either. And that we actually ate. What obsessed me though about that is it was too stringent. It was just too stringent. It was just too strict. And to be honest about it, you know, most of the parents are the ones that kind of, well, I wasn't a parent at the time, but most of the parents, including myself though, we were the ones that actually started like pushing, you know, to eat all raw food when, you know, and we're talking about the other kids, not y'all, but the Treachy and Delish and all them. You know, the parents actually pushed that more, you know, after hearing the guidelines and hearing what was natural and all that. But the shame for me comes in is that we didn't, there's certain things that they're talking about now that they were talking about, like Mike said, horse meat and stuff like that we did not give to kids.
And I talked to one of the older members one of my older peers, one of the first, second generation people. And he said that didn't last long. It didn't last long because exactly what happened. People got sick. Mm-hmm. Some of the kids got sick. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped. I never got sick from it that I know of.
Well,
but other people did.
Well, thank God for that, because listen, man, the point in life is to learn from stuff you've done that was not right. You know, you're supposed to learn from that. And, you know, hopefully if somebody give you correction or information about it, that you do
you correct change,
it. Yeah, you know, like, damn, man, that was messed up, man. Mm-hmm. I did that. That was, you know, whether you treated somebody bad, harmfully, you know, it's supposed to make you feel bad so that, you know, you will change. If you don't have any conscience about it, man, you're in trouble. You know, but when something's pointed out to you that you've done wrong, you should feel good that you were given that correction and took it to heart in a way that you embraced it and wanted to change. It is really detrimental to you and those around you when you feel that you can't be corrected. Or that only certain people can say things to you.
Is that what you think the problem was mostly in the organization?
I think that's the problem in not just the organization, but certainly in the organization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people is, you know, they just won't listen to reason, won't listen to something that will, you know, help.
Is that what you think really is like what's pushed this stuff over the edge with? Like people just wouldn't.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. It is, you know.
And who do you blame for that? Whose fault was that? That these things people didn't learn, they just kept going. It just never, the correction, the learning, it was just absent.
Well, I think each and every individual who does not hold themselves account, to account for either leading or following. Because everybody got a brain, man. You know, so if the people who are certainly the adults, mm-hmm. who has, you know, a particular charge over children and young thinking, you know, that when either you don't listen to other people that are critical of something you're saying and don't listen to everybody, and especially the children. When you do not listen to, when you don't feel that you have to listen to anyone, That's a real problem, man. That's a recipe for, you know,
just what's happening now. That's a recipe yeah. for. And that's what it was for me also. It became too dictatorial. It was just too dictatorial. Like everything was, you know, had to be one way. And if it wasn't that way, you was violating, you was cursing John Africa. You didn't believe in John. It was just too much. It was just too much of that. And it's just too dictatorial.
I recognize that there, look, I got 4 kids. And raising kids is definitely a full-time job. And I know that you can't have the same kind of impact on your children's lives from prison, 15 minutes at a time, phone calls and yearly visits and all of this kind of stuff. Parenting from prison is, I can't even say how, I don't even know, right? What that's like to do that. I know what it's like to feel that, but I don't know what it's like to do that. But I guess my question is, where do you see yourself as contributing to this whole situation, right? Do you see yourself as, like, whose fault is this? I guess is the question. As the parents of Wit, right? You surely or had some kind of influence, but obviously your decisions were either not respected or whatever.
Yeah, and you know why? Well, then the fault for that is mine, because I should not have put myself in a position where I wasn't around my children.
What do you mean by that?
I mean,
you were in prison.
No, before I went to prison. I wasn't always in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the decision to participate in some things that took me away from my children
mm-hmm.
is where my fault is. You know, because y'all should have never been in that position where... If I did make a decision about y'all, it wasn't respected. So in essence, the fault is mine. Wit should have never been in that position where she was without her father. You should have never been in a position where you were born in prison. You know, your mom should never have been in a position where she had you in prison. So to the extent of who's at fault for those decisions is mine. Because I didn't have to be where I was. I could have chosen to walk away from that situation, and I should have.
I guess the question is, why didn't you?
Yeah, that's a question for me that I should have and didn't. I think by that time I felt sort of stuck, kind of pushed into staying there,
mm-hmm.
afraid in some ways that I would lose my family. But I think looking back on it, I should have just taken the stand and just push through that thought and grabbed hold of my family and got them to safety.
When you hear that, Mom, what do you think about that?
Well, I do feel the same way as your dad. I feel like I'm the fault, too. I feel like as a parent, you should protect your children. I have children. They're my responsibility. So I should have been, had the foresight to the instinct to look at a situation and say, you know what, this doesn't feel right. But instead, because I felt my whole heart was in the teachings of John Africa, and I believed in things that were told to me about even the situation that we were in 78. And so I believed it. I believed in this. I trusted. It wasn't nothing. It wasn't fly by night, like type of what I read from the guidelines. I really believed in it. And so I made my decisions based on that. based on what I felt like, oh, this is right. This is good. This is what we should do. This is the truth. This is, you know, and so that is what I really believe. But I should have been able to instinctively feel that just something was not right, that you have to protect your children. You just can't just take them, you know, and just, you know, you just have to think. You have to think. You can't just do something that you want to do or you feel like it's, even if you feel like it's right to do, you know, you just can't do that.
You know, I know that feeling you're talking about. I remember being in situations where we were in serious, serious danger. And there's this level of like commitment and loyalty and faith to what you were taught is right. What is right, the right thing to do. It's like the right thing to do is to take this stand, and no matter what happens to us, let God figure it out. And yeah, we could get hurt. Yeah, the kids could get hurt. We could get killed. And I remember being in those positions and taking those stances. And fortunately, and we could have ended up exactly like y'all in prison because we were in those positions. And it could have been worse. It could have ended like 85. And having that mindset that you're doing this for the greater good, when I think about it now, it is incredibly crazy.
Yeah. And that's what it is, the greater good.
It's incredibly crazy because, wow. So I'm going to work to heal and shield and protect all these other people that I don't know, but I'm not going to do that for my own kids. Yep. It's like on a much smaller scale. It's like coming home from work, it's payday, you're about to bring home the bacon and you take it to your neighbor's house and feed their kids first. Mm-hmm. And then give your kids whatever they didn't eat. That's how it feels now, thinking back at it.
And that's exactly the shame of it for me.
And if your kids don't get enough to eat,
yeah,
guess what? What happens if they don't eat? And then when they grow up and complain about being hungry and complain that you fed the neighbor's kids first and complain and they're depressed and they need therapy and all of this kind of stuff, who do you blame? You blame the person that talked you into feeling that way or believing that nonsense?
No. And that's,
do you blame the person?
That's,
or do you blame yourself for letting, for going along with that nonsense?
And there you go.
Blame myself.
I know we just got started and, you know, we could really go into this and do this all day, but we're going to have to wrap this one up right here. We're going to have to do a part two because I know Mom and Dad, both of y'all still have a lot to say. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure you come back with us next week. We'll continue this conversation. Until then, peace out.